30th, 2015. Let the record reflect that it is 3:30 p.m. Committee members present, Senator Costello, Vice Chair, Senator Stedman, Senator Coghill, and myself, Senator Giesel. I expect Senator Welikowski, Senator Machicki, and Senator Stoltz along shortly. Recording Secretary Ann today, thank you so much for helping us. Jessica is running the audio for us, thank you. And my committee aide is Ike. Today we're going to take up the confirmation of former Senator Joe Pasquin to the Board of Directors of Alaska Gasline Development Corporation. Then we're going to go back to revisit Senate Bill 70, the Gasline Right-of-Way Bill, heard first on March 9th. And if there's time, we'll get to Senate Bill 50, which is the ADA Authorization Bill. So we'll start out with the confirmation for Senator Pasquin. Welcome, Senator Pasquin, if you'd join us at the table.
Good afternoon.
Welcome. So before we start, as I do for a lot of the boards and commissions, I try to be consistent in doing them all, I just wanted to review the statute defining the role for which you're applying, and that is found in AS 3125020. This is a public member seat. There are five public members. And in Section B of that statute, it says public members of the board shall be appointed by the governor and are subject to confirmation by the legislature. When appointing a public member to the board, the governor shall consider an individual's expertise and experience in natural gas pipeline construction, operation and marketing, finance, large project management, and other expertise and experience that is relevant to the purpose, powers, and duties of the corporation. So just as an overview. So welcome, Senator Pasquin. If you could just review briefly your experience and tell us about your interest in this position.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do thank you for this opportunity. Again, my name is Joe Pasquin, and I have been nominated for the Board of Directors for the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation, and I'm here to ask for your vote of confirmation for that nomination. I was born and raised in Alaska. I graduated from high school and then the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. I was married in Fairbanks to a woman who was also born and raised in Fairbanks, and we've been married for almost 38 years. We have four children, currently two grandchildren, with by the end of this year, two more grandchildren, so we'll have four by the end of this year. I have been and continue to be an attorney in private practice and have been for over 30 years. Actually, it's my 35th year that I'm in practicing at this time. I've been a member of Rotary for approximately 25 years. I've been on the Diocesan Finance Committee for approximately 25 years. I'm a guest lecturer at the UAF downtown campus in a number of topics. When my boys were in comp hockey, I was a certified hockey coach, and certainly I have my years of experience as a senator. This nomination is for the AGDC board as a public member, as Madam Chair has pointed out, and I think it's important to point out that as part of my professional life, I do have experience in construction, and actually quite a bit, and both large and small construction. I've represented major contractors in Interior Alaska, and they have been, and I've been involved on their behalf, involved with construction disputes. I've been involved with large projects involving state contracts, and I've also been involved with small construction contracts involving only private construction contracts. As part of my work, obviously, as an attorney, I hire, you know, seek out and hire advisors and consultants to best help and assist my client. I'm currently on two subcommittees with AGDC. One is what is in shorthand the tech committee, and the other is a commercialization subcommittee. The tech is led by Dave Cruz of the Cruz Construction Companies, and the commercialization is led by John Burns. Subcommittees only gather information, and then we present that information that we've gathered to the full board. So no subcommittee takes any action. An overarching task of AGDC is to promote the delivery of gas at the lowest rates to to Alaskans. That's what the origin of AGDC was at the beginning. The task of AGDC is to secure and engage professional and technical advisors. That is one of the mandates under AS 3125060. AGDC is looking at two projects as directed at as a matter of law. The first and foremost project is called the AK LNG project. In my opinion, and I believe in most Alaskans' opinion, that the probabilities of the biggest success to Alaska is with AK LNG. The AK LNG project is currently a 42-inch diameter pipe with the potential of 48-inch diameter pipe, but they are currently assessing the 42-inch diameter. The second and the backup project is the ASAP project, which is a 36-inch project. And the ASAP objective is to ensure that Alaska has an economically viable alternative if AKLNG falters. And AGDC has been tasked and performs work which advances both projects. Fritz Krusen advises the board on the AKLNG project, and I believe Mr. Krusen has approximately 30 or 35 years with Conoco, specifically in the area of liquefaction experience. So he is he is not a consultant to AGDC. He is a employee directly of AGDC because of that experience. Frank Richards advises the AGDC board on the ASAP project. I thought it would be important to provide the Resources Committee with some examples of work that advances both the AKLNG project and the ASAP project. It provides a framework for the sharing of data and coordinating of work. There is historical data such as geotechnical, hydrological, environmental, cultural, and routing work that is part of that. They establish a common pipeline route. The route of AKLNG and ASAP essentially are about 98.5% identical, and it's only when you get south of the Susitna River is there just a little deviation between the two projects. So again, the AGDC addressing the right-of-way work, it is advancing both projects. An environmental impact statement was submitted in October 2012, and a supplemental environmental impact statement was initiated in August of last year, 2014. Some of the work that advances both projects: there are many river and stream crossing surveys and design work that needs to be done, and that includes two-dimensional mapping of these crossings. There is a potential for cultural resources, and so that's part of the survey. Wetland delineation benefits both projects. There's been greater than 400 geotechnical boreholes that have been drilled that advances both projects. 128 material sources, the sites have been identified. There's been air quality monitoring data and permit work done for the gas conditioning facility that would exist on the North Slope. There's been testing of the pipe, and there's been a fish habitat reporting. There's been biological assessment. You know, so there. I wanted to give the committee a flavor of the type of work that advances both projects. In the ASAP project, there is what is called a Class 3 cost estimate, which was recently delivered, and I might add, on time. And the importance of this is that the consultants that are retained in conjunction with the AGDC staff itself followed a methodology and estimate breakdowns, and the records that they have assembled are industry standard. And this was accomplished, again, with AGDC staff and consultants, and it's what is I've been told is essentially the A-team. And this is a team that is in a very narrow field, which is Arctic engineering, and the AKLNG project has also assembled what they consider the A-team, so that you have Both projects have retained their A-team for purpose of advancing the projects, and the A-team for ASAP was about to be disbanded. It was, I think, was supposed to be disbanded in the month of April sometime. These skilled peoples have been and are working on the 36-inch pipe with lean gas. And again, that team will soon disband. And so one of the topics at the March AGDC board meeting was what other potential use might there be for this A-team before they disband, again, within the overarching thought of the concept of AGDC potentially being able to deliver an economically viable alternative should AKLNG stumble or falter. Mr. Cruz, who is the head of the tech committee, is the one that was recommending to the full board that the AGDC full board would consider what Mr. Cruz, in discussions with Mr. Richards and the consultants as part of the ASAP project. And so AGDC at that March meeting was presented with a potential for cost estimates on what is called an ANSI, ANSI 900 pipe, in addition to a cost estimate for the ANSI 600 pipe. The difference in that pipe is a difference between approximately 480 PSI for the 600 and 2,220 for the ANSI 900 pipe. The question that, from my perspective as a member of the AGDC board, was to ask the A-team, you know, what might Alaska need to think about with respect, you know, while we still had the A-team assembled before they were going to disband. And it was brought up in that meeting that AGDC was not needing to request any additional money from the legislature to do that. So to put this in perspective, at the start of this process, the pipe was what's called X70 material grade. There's been no change in the X70 material grade. The pipe size has not changed from a 36-inch to any other inch size. So it stayed at 36-inch, and the type of gas that would be within that pipe has not changed. It was lean gas before, it's lean gas afterwards. So again, the difference was, is okay, if you have this ANSI 900, what might you accomplish with increased pressurization? But to do that as part of this overall economically viable alternative, the question was what range? There's a rough order of magnitude, and that's an acronym within this field. It's called ROM, rough order of magnitude, for the pipe, potential increase in the gas conditioning facility, and the potential for additional compression. No LNG component was part of this direction. And again, the question, and what I think is under the prudent person standard, is within a 36-inch pipe with lean gas, to consider that the ASAP project may become economic or may become more economic by addressing, for example, using an ANSI 900 pipe, and again, so with everything else remaining the same. So using compression, you can increase an ANSI pipe to either the 1.4 BCF, or if it's an ANSI 900 pipe, you can increase it to 2.4 BCF within that 36-inch line. Again, nothing that is competitive with a 42 or a 48-inch line. And the AKLNG is also using the X70 pipe and, I believe, the ANSI 900. So there's, you know, this type of work is work that potentially is beneficial to both projects. So AGDC board in March 2015, as to cost only, wanted to use this skilled team that can provide industry standards estimates using the ASAP 36-inch line. And ultimately, in my mind, I looked at it as from the perspective of, does volume increase the deliverability of the lowest cost to Alaskans, and does economy of scale, you know, help as, you know, to do that? And so, again, this is if and only if AKLNG falters to go through the stage gates to construction. And I think it's important for this committee to understand that it's likely mid-year 2016 that Alaska, this committee, and the entire legislature will have a pretty good idea if AKLNG is going to actually move forward. I mean, that is the timetable that is before us all. And again, if AKLNG does not continue to move forward, would this additional information that could be obtained before this these consultants, the A-team, were disbanded, could this more information be of value to advance the ASAP objective of ensuring that Alaska has a viable and economic alternative, again, should we get to a year, year and a quarter from now, and AKLNG is failing to move forward. So, again, what is Alaska's fallback position? AGDC is not engaging in a project. I think we made that very clear, that this was not a project, that AGDC is only looking at costs using this A-team, which we had access to for only a short period of time. And the belief overall is, to the extent that there may be a window of opportunity for the development in the future, we wanted to have as much information available as possible. So, given that, those are somewhat my prepared remarks, anticipating that there may be questions from the committee. So, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Pascavent. Having read the minutes from that AGDC board meeting, you did a great job summarizing the AKLNG 101, or the LNG 101 briefing that they gave you. Much of that information, of course, members of this committee have been getting over the past 2 years. Before we go on, though, I want to recognize that Senator Wielkowski and Senator Stoltz have joined us, so welcome. So we'll now give you some questions. You're absolutely correct in assuming that this is a committee that's pretty interested in the technical aspects of what's going on, and we've stayed pretty abreast of those kinds of things. So, but first, going back to your presentation of your resume, you said that you had been involved in representing construction. What was the construction of? What kinds of construction?
Major roadways, some buildings. Those would be. You know, some of the larger state projects that when you have, like the development of the Johansson Expressway in interior Alaska, I represented the major contractor that was involved in that. I had represented that company for decades until it was sold, and then I represented the owner individually even after he sold the company. So I was involved going back to probably 1981 in working with a large construction contractor dealing with state contracts. So that's just one of the examples.
Well, that makes sense. So again, going back to looking at this particular position and the qualifications, of course, that I had read, I'm guessing, but perhaps you could clarify, that you feel your qualifications fall under large project management, that criteria in the statute?
You know, I was involved with the engineers that were employed by the company's owner. I wasn't developing the large project management, but I do know that the managers that I dealt with on behalf of the owner was involved in the sequencing of large projects like that. So I've been familiar with that type of process for over 30 years.
Well, that makes sense. And you have a great resume of community service and state service. As I consider this board, it's a pretty technical board. and you know, three folks sat in those seats before. Actually is adding up the years that they have in actually the gas industry. It comes close to 100 years worth of experience. Which of those three folks, and I'm sure you're probably familiar with each one of them, do you feel like you're filling the slot for?
I guess I haven't thought about it in the sense that I was filling a particular individual's slot. You know, that it's the word was presented to me that the governor would like for me to serve Alaska, and I felt that it was important that I, if asked, that I could contribute. So my answer was yes. But answering your question, I know Drew Pierce was on there for a while. She has political experience. I don't know if she has construction law experience. So, you know, certainly the, and I can't remember the gentleman's name, that you know, the out-of-state guys. I can't remember their names. Pardon.
Well, there was one gentleman from out-of-state, Mr. Rabinow, and then Mr. Yeah. Vallejo actually lives in Alaska in Big Lake.
Yeah, so, but anyway, the point is that, you know, that's not on a technical basis, but then, Mr. Cruz, I suspect, I don't know, there can be three members on the subcommittee, so I know it's myself and Mr. Cruz, and again, I can't remember who, you know, because we're just getting my feet wet in this thing. So I am on that tech committee with Mr. Cruz, and I like him. I think we get along well, and again, I have dealt all my life with engineers, and that is what I've done both in my construction litigation and then experts in general in all of my litigation.
Yes, referring to former Senator Drew Pierce, she actually was the federal coordinator for the Alaska Natural Gas Transportation Projects for 3 years and has some engineering experience. So certainly she had some legislative experience too. Senator Wojciechowski, question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. It's good to see you. I'll just share my experience of having served with you very briefly. I found you to be one of the most thoughtful, hardworking, conscientious people that I've ever dealt with in this building. And I certainly appreciated your knowledge and background on all kinds of resources issues, particularly oil and gas issues. And I can say, as someone who served on the committee, this committee with you when you chaired it, that we dealt with plenty of oil and gas issues at that time, and I know you certainly got a lot of experience doing that. But I do just want to say for the record, Madam Chair, that just reiterate, this is a public member seat, and based on the concerns that I had heard, I asked Legislative Legal whether or not Senator Pasfan and Rick Calford and Hugh Short met the requirements of the statute, and I asked for a legal opinion, and I'll get a copy for everyone. And if I could just read two sentences from that, if
sure.
I could, Madam Chair. It says, well, actually, I'll read three sentences. I'll go back one. It says, the statute does not, however, require that the governor select a public member with specific experience in natural gas, pipeline construction, operation, marketing, or finance, or large project management. In fact, the statute gives the governor explicit authority to consider other expertise and experience when selecting board members. A court is unlikely to find that the governor's current nominees, and I specifically asked about Senator Pasfan, Rick Alford, and Hugh Short, a court is unlikely to find that the governor's current nominees to the AGDC board violate the statute, considering the broad authority given to the governor in selecting public members by the statute. So I feel confident that at least according to our legislative attorneys, you meet the requirements. But my question was on a different area, and it was on something that you said which really struck me, which is the idea that Dave Cruz, Mr. Cruz, was the one who asked for the reconfiguration of the project. And can you maybe explain a little bit about that?
Yes. We were, I think, a couple hours into the meeting when the issue of the reconfiguration, and again, it's reconfiguration not by size or material grade of the pipe, It just in the upgrade of the ANSI standard, you know, that he was advocating that that's given the situation that the ASAP team was at, it would be good to look into and find out what, on a rough order of, you know, magnitude, what the costs that would be with that might be.
Do you have a follow-up, Senator Walikowski? All right. So I'll follow up on that.
Sure.
So this committee is, I believe, pretty well aware that the AGDC board has about $200 million in the fund for the ASAP line. So what will, did you ask, what the cost of the cost estimate for these new configurations would be?
What, there, first of all, it was explicitly stated that there was not a need to ask the legislature for any more money to do this, that these, that this team had, I believe that they had given their Class 3 estimates on time, and they were going to be disbanding. They're, so to speak, putting the ribbon on part of it, and that while they were there, they could do this, and it would be the most economic, least intrusive way to get this valuable information. Because if you, if they disbanded and then 2 months later or 6 months later you needed to get that information, you would then have to put out a public solicitation. We were told by Mr. Richards that, and from what I believe it's accurate and true, is that this team is very skilled in the area of Arctic engineering. They to try to assemble that group again, it would be many times more costly to put together that rough order of magnitude analysis, kind of what might need to be considered as this viable alternative.
So, understanding that this is new subject matter for you, did you ask what we would do with the extra gas coming through the ASAP? Well, the reconfigured, well, that seems to be the term that you're coining, the reconfigured ASAP line. And here's what I'm getting at. Just review. Remember, the ASAP line ends in Big Lake.
Correct.
It just comes down to Big Lake, where it connects with the NSTAR system. So some questions I wonder if you asked, and I'm interested in the answers. What's NSTAR going to do with the rest of that now increased volume of gas? Can they handle it? Where will it go?
I think that the expectation was is that the volume of gas would certainly indicate that there was a potential for export. In other words, that if certainly at a 2.5 BCF, that is well beyond the consumption within the state of Alaska. So the question is the AKLNG project could not go forward even if it was an economic project, because AKLNG has the full authority to determine that they want to develop a project elsewhere in the world. So from my perspective, I mean, I think that's all part of the foundation documents, like the heads of agreement, I believe expressly provides to the producers that they can develop projects elsewhere in the world. So if AKLNG should choose to do that, again, the question is what is Alaska's backup plan? And so that's why I voted yes, and it was a unanimous vote of the AGDC to vote that we find out what these what we should be thinking about in the event that AKLNG stops for whatever reason.
So the current ASAP line can increase its capacity with compression also. Do you know what it can increase to?
1,480 PSI.
Right.
That's the ANSI 600 pipe.
Absolutely. That's an accurate answer. Mm-hmm. My question is carrying capacity.
My rough guess is by putting, and based upon my memory of the testimony, is if you have to increase the gas conditioning / treatment facility and you might have to put in 6 or 7 or 8 compressors, that would get the projects to a 1.5 BCF using the ANSI 600 X70 material grade pipe.
Sure, and that's about right. But when we think about the capacity that Alaska itself, we ourselves have, what is our need for natural gas? That's the fundamental question that we have, right? You guys probably talked about that too.
Sure, it's 250 million cubic feet a day. You know, there's hope that potentially the Donlin project would need some more. There's hope that Fairbanks someday will, through the chair, that Senator Coghill, I know, wants to get gas to his community as I do to mine. If the question is addressing, let's assume you take an ANSI 600 and you compress it up to a 1.5 B per day, that would be more than Alaska could consume. I acknowledge that. And the question that has to be thought about consistent with that is, by creating additional volume, can you deliver the lowest cost gas to Alaskans, which would mean there might be customers out there that would want it beyond Alaska customers?
Of course. My question is, with the ASAP line, we can already compress and get up to 1.5 to 1.6 B. And so I'm trying to get to the rationale that the board went through, the questions you asked, and the information you were given that drove you to say, yes, let's spend some of that $200 million that's set aside to go to whichever pipeline proceeds forward when the FEED decision is made in second quarter 2016. And instead, you decided to spend some of that money now to get yet another cost estimate, in other words, a study of another possible pipeline. What information drove you to make that decision?
Well, again, it is still a 36-inch pipe. It's still X70 material grade. It's just increasing the capacity to put a little more PSI into the pipe, and the committee looked at that as being prudent in an economic analysis to look at the components that might have an increased cost should the AKLNG falter, and that you wouldn't want to be a year down the road, for example, and then it might cost 10 times as much money and put this potential determination a year and a half. I mean, if there's a window of opportunity that many believe exists now, you don't want to lose that window. In part, that's some of my thinking. I don't know whether everyone on the board is thinking the same way, but you know, I'm hearing from a lot of people that there's a window of opportunity. The Japanese, I believe, are building LNG receiving facilities on the west coast of Japan because they're worried about earthquake and tsunami potential on the east coast. So if they are in the process of building those facilities, my expectation is that they want to make sure that if there is a new facility for export to them, that there would be compatibility. So, I mean, all of those things are just, and I don't think that's discussed on the record, but that's what's in my mind.
Thank you. Senator Walikowski. Oh, pardon me. Did you want to finish something?
Well, one of the things that, with respect to the free trade agreement countries, one of the things that I didn't know is what countries were free trade agreement countries. It's pretty much anticipated that AKLNG's customers would be Korea, Japan, Taiwan. Only Korea is a free trade agreement country. So, anyway, I just wanted to bring that up as far as one of the questions that was going through my mind when one was addressing potential volumes. And again, we sit on AGDC with two projects in front of us. So, you know, who are potential purchasers of this product?
Sure. And the application has been made for non-free trade agreement countries as well. It hasn't been granted yet. But you're right, it's in process. Senator Walikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I had requested a more in-depth discussion of the financial issues of how AGDC is intending to spend their money under HB 132 just a couple hours ago. And I was told pretty overwhelmingly at that time we didn't need to have that discussion. Looking at the minutes from the March 12, 2015 meeting, after Chairman Dave Cruz had tasked the AGDC staff to look at reconfiguration of the ASAP project to relax the 500 million MCF limit, Frank Richards testified that the primary objective was to keep alive a backup plan to the AKLNG project. And that's the testimony several weeks ago. And just in looking at some of the things that, comparing what AGDC is doing, what the AKLNG project is doing, you had an X70 grade pipe before this was relaxed. You've got an X70 grade pipe now. You had a 36-inch pipe before. You've got a 36-inch pipe now. The AKLNG pipe is a 42-inch pipe. Can you talk about what your project is doing in terms of whether or not it's competing with the big line or whether or not it's a backup to the big line?
Well, clearly, during the March AGDC meeting, it was my understanding that it was not competition. We were explicitly saying, and again, how I started this hearing, saying my personal belief is that a 42 or 48 inch export line is likely to give the biggest monetary potential to the state of Alaska with delivering the lowest cost to individual Alaskans. So, that's my starting premise as to why I don't. AKLNG should be the front runner. ASAP should be the backup.
Follow up, Senator Walikowski.
So there's been some concern about duplicating efforts between what you're doing and what AKLNG is doing. Can you do you agree with that or disagree with that?
My understanding is that the work can benefit both projects. In other words, for some of the same reasons that you indicated, that the materials testing of an X70 materials grade benefits both projects. The AKLNG 42-inch is an ANSI 900 pipe, so it's not like this is doing work that doesn't provide information that can be useful to advancing both projects.
In terms of working collaboratively with AKLNG, do you continue to work collaboratively with them, or has that changed in any way?
What both Board Chair Burns and Mr. Cruz indicated is that the working relationship was good, and in the discussions with Fritz Cruzen from AKLNG and Frank Richards with ASAP is that they were sharing the type of information that was appropriate. And again, going to that issue of competition, I specifically believe that Mr. Cruz said in that on the record that this that they wasn't competitive, that wasn't the intent of this, that it was it's not to be competitive with the AKLNG project. That so I don't know how to say that any better, I guess. So
follow up, Senator Wilkowski. Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Senator, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator, for coming before us, and most of all, thank you for being willing to step up and even come into this political arena, which I know you're very well aware. We love to have our politics here, but thank you for that. I found you to be a tenacious advocate when you were here in the Senate, and when I disagreed with you, I found you even more tenacious. And as long as you're going to be an advocate for Alaska, I mean, I think qualifications notwithstanding, I think, you know, you're on the board. I would like to see probably a little more qualifications. But I have about three questions. The first one is, from your body of information, what do you bring to this that you think is really valuable for Alaska as far as the quality qualifications that Joe Pascan brings?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, I take very seriously any work that I do. In other words, I don't ever consider myself as a games player. And when I was part of this legislative body in this particular committee, I had my office join the American Society of Petroleum Engineers because I wanted access to their documents, because I want to study what they have to say about this. So I work hard. I think that I make good determinations after working hard. I don't prejudge projects. I don't prejudge outcomes. As a trial attorney, you know, some of those things are like politics. You never know where that's going to go. But you have to, I'm a true believer in facts matter. At the end of the day, engineering is all about facts. And if you don't have the facts when it comes to engineering, the project will implode. And so I believe that it's important to have people that are hardworking, take it serious, rely on, and as the statute says, retain consultants to advise us in the best possible way, and then make, using a prudent person standard, you make a decision and you move forward. So I think that those skills are right in what I do best.
And I don't, Madam Chairman, I don't doubt that at all. Probably because of our political differences, I would be concerned about the prejudging something. And but I think statutorily we've given you a pretty good pathway. Do you feel confident that you can stay within that statutory framework at this point?
I view my work on the AGDC board as non-political. Mm-hmm. In other words, I think that this is a board that is tasked with ultimately getting gas to Alaskans, and I don't think, from my perspective on the board, I don't think that's political. And so I want to get a gas line construction started.
Amen to that, Madam Chair. And thank you, Joe. one of the issues that we're dealing with, and you've heard it already talked about, is in working with the AGDC and watching the AKLNG progress, we want to make sure that we don't compete against ourselves. It's really not competing against the oil companies. This is a real problem that I have, is that we ramp this up to the point where we actually compete against ourselves as partakers of that heads-up agreement. And so you don't see what has happened in the board to this point as pushing up against that and competing against ourselves is what the real problem is.
No, I don't, is a short answer through the chair. I think that this is the ASAP project and the AKLNG project, and within the ASAP, it is simply what are rough order of magnitude costs associated with a little more pressurization. And it's as a fallback position so that we would use the competence and the qualifications of that A team most efficiently.
One of the questions we have, and watching the thing that you said is a preferred method forward, I think having a backup plan is important. But once we began the conversation with the DNR, we kept calling it alternate plan, and it started causing us some concern. And so I'm really glad to hear what you're having to say, because at this point, it's a pipe. That's all it is a pipe. And we don't have a seller. We don't have a buyer yet. But the governor has talked about going ahead and soliciting buyers. What's been the discussion from your perspective on that board about soliciting buyers for this line?
I don't recall that at the board meeting. And I can tell you that I was not contacted by the governor or the governor's office before my attendance at the March board meeting. So, I mean, it's I don't know if that's the direct answer. I can tell you that a week ago when I flew down to present to the House Resources Committee, I sat next to Representative Kurt Olson for a lot of hours, and so he and I had, I think, a good conversation, and I think he understands exactly, you know, I'm having in less formal than this, but with Representative Olson, I had a good conversation with him, telling him where I'm coming from. And again, I don't consider this to be a political board. I don't consider it to be, you know, this is a board to get work done.
And Madam Chair, I will stop there for this point, but I will just make a comment. If that's the case, I'm going to be behind you. Because I've seen you in the political arena, and I've seen how, you know, political an animal you can be, and if you're committed to this process and have the same tenacity, you will probably have my highest respect, and I will probably have to be convinced that a little bit, but I don't doubt your noble character, but I do doubt sometimes being able to disconnect from the political arena, like all of us. We've all had to do that. If I was sitting in a different seat and you were sitting here, you'd be asking me the same question.
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, thank you very much. And I would say, if you have any question, call anytime. You know, because I consider this my opportunity to make sure, and again, to the extent one comes out of this building, and there is politics here, and there always is. And so to the extent that I can assure you that this is not politics that drives me, to some extent, one of the reasons that I was interested in this is because it was non-political. And again, when I get there and then I'm listening to people like Dave Cruz saying, this makes sense for this board to consider, and I agreed with them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just for clarification, it's not the AGDC board that does the marketing of the gas. It's actually the team in DNR that does that. But Senator Stedman has not yet had an opportunity, and he had a question.
Yeah, more of a comment. Several things. I think it's proven that whatever we build, it's economic. And it's pretty clear a small line with lower volume for 250,000 feet is not economic. 500 is not economic. So whatever we do, we can't just pay all cash and have a boondoggle and drain our permanent fund down, because we certainly don't have the cash to out of our CBR and SBR anymore. So in the event that the LNG large line stalls and fails, whatever goes forward. But speaking directly about the character in front of us, you know, it's easy to take the politics and roll it in, especially when we've all, most of us here, have all worked with him in his past role here in the legislature, and there's always baggage with that, regardless basically who it is, because you're never going to agree with anybody all the time, particularly when we get into oil and gas tax or we get into some of these bigger statewide issues. But what I found with candidate Bassan is he reads the information and takes it from a technical standpoint, tries to make a rational decision, and I didn't agree with him on all this stuff, and we'd argue quite a bit on all kinds of things. But you can't ask more for these board members than to read and understand the information. They're not going to be experts on anything. We aren't experts on everything. We certainly don't have any candidates in Alaska that I know that have built a $50 billion project. They're pretty hard to find. So when we talk about projects in Alaska, we're talking about $100 million road projects or $100 million building projects, not a $25 billion liquefaction plant. So it's just the scale of what we're dealing with. Also, it's nice to see the governor appoint people that have been here a long time, and I particularly like to see people that were born and raised in Alaska, or born in the territory for our age. I think they have a little different perspective, you know, people that have been here much shorter time frame, and look at things a little bit different. So I'm comfortable in that respect. The issue rolling around to the couple hundred million or 180, whatever it is left in the ASAP game that the board has to privy over, frankly, that was a political error by the legislature to give the previous governor 400 and some million in one appropriation. Normally, we don't do that. The governors change from time to time. Sometimes they get run off in landslides countrywide. So once they expense that 200 million, they can't do much if we're smart enough to give them funds 1 year at a time. We want control of what they're doing. What we don't want to do is hand them a check for $400 million and then we'll check back in a few years. So also, while I'm on the bandwagon, those funds were initially set aside for future capital budgets when we didn't have any funds for capital budgets. I don't know if you guys want to go back that far, so I don't begrudge the board for, you know, having those funds sitting there, but we need to reflect on how they're there and how we want to play in the future as a legislature, because one of our only controls we have is over the funds. And once the governor has the funds, pretty hard to do much about it. So anyway, I don't really have any direct questions with Mr. Paskin. I know him both personally and professionally. I don't think the governor could have found a finer candidate to sit on that board. And I'm not going to agree with all his decisions, but I'd be floored if he would advocate for and want the state to build an economic project regardless if it's with the majors or a standalone line by ourselves. I just don't think he'd do that.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Senator Wilkowski, question?
I do have a question. And again, this is a public seat. And I, for what I'm looking for is I want someone who's going to go down and fight as hard as they can get to make sure we have a plan in place, a backup plan, that delivers gas to Alaskans, low-cost gas to Alaskans, and hopefully gets us a little revenue as a state. And in your professional background here, I know you fought for those things. I know you were one of the first people to be out front pushing for a small diameter line, a little, I think, 8-inch PVC line from Cook Inlet up to Fairbanks. And I think some people maybe looked sideways, but that seems to be the place where a lot of people are coming around today and saying, wow, we should have done that, and maybe we still should do that. But you've always been, I've always found you to be a very strong advocate for getting low-cost gas to Alaskans, the people in your community. And I would agree with the comment from Senator from North Pole about your tenacity. I'm glad I've never had the opportunity to go up against you in court, because I know you are extremely tenacious. And I would not say that you were one of the more political people in this building. I would not say that by any means at all. I've always found you to be a straight shooter. You definitely have your ideas. You know, you're on the board now with Dave Cruz, and I know you two are on different sides of some of the gas issues in the past, and I know your brother and you, who works for BP, are on some different sides, but I think your experience is that you get along with people, and you fight hard for what you believe in, but in the end, I don't think anyone can question that you are fighting for Alaska's best interests. And so the question I have for you is on the one area where there seems to be a little bit of concern is that's oil and gas experience. And again, this is a public seat, but you have consultants and advisors, and you have other technical seats. Is that right?
Absolutely, and the statutory structure provides that explicitly to the AGDC board to retain these high-quality experts to advise us, so that you know, the skill set that any one particular member or the board overall may not have can be provided to the board. And you know, Madam Chair, if I may, I think it's important to understand that other than when I was an elected official, I've never worked for government. You know, I have only worked in private enterprise. I have been the one, when I was running my father's business, whether I'm running my, I'm the one signing the names on the bottom of the, you know, I understand what it's like to have to be responsible financially. And I agree with Senator Stedman's statements that, you know, this, it is, I do not want any non-economic project that is going to be a drain on this state. And you know, my wife and I are going to live here for the rest of our lives. You know, this is home. So
very good. Did you have a follow-up, Senator Wilikowski? Just for clarification, Senator Wilikowski, I know you keep calling this a public seat, and you're absolutely right. Five of the seats on the board are public seats, and there are only two that are specifically designated, and those are commissioners, which, again, the governor has latitude. The Commissioner of Commerce and the Commissioner of Labor will be on these committees. So one question for you, Senator Pascavan. The AKLNG project went through a site selection process, rather rigorous site selection process, and they chose Nikiski. Because it met the qualifications they were looking for, technical qualifications. Do you have any difference of opinion with them on that selection?
I don't think that was discussed at all, but I don't personally have a feeling. I know that when I was co-chair of resources, some of the Marine pilots had made some comments to me about that, but it's not an opinion of mine. It's just information that was conveyed to me.
Very good. In light of the fact you were looking at an alternative project, I thought perhaps you were looking at an alternative destination as well. So I appreciate your answer. Question about the confidentiality agreement. I listened to your testimony and in the other body, and you indicated that you were actually quite interested in signing a confidentiality agreement. Could you talk about that to this committee?
Sure. I guess going back to my years as an attorney, ethics require that attorneys keep information confidential. So that is not a concept that is certainly, is I am acutely aware of the ethics of confidentiality. In a commercial project, there are contractual obligations that arise out of it, separate from the ethics of confidentiality. I do not have a problem signing a confidentiality agreement. I think that, as I understand, that they are looking at tailoring a confidentiality agreement that is appropriate for transparent government, but then at the same time recognizing that there are aspects of information that, assuming we receive it, should not be conveyed to any others. That is a process that I followed all my life. I do not have a problem with signing a contractual confidentiality agreement.
Very good. Any other questions, committee members? All right. Seeing none, Senator Passman, thank you very much for being here today, and congratulations on those two upcoming grandchildren.
Senator Giesel, thank you very much.
You're welcome. So at this time, in accordance with AS 3905080, the Resources Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Alaska Gasoline Development Corporation Board of Directors, Joe Pascovan. I just had another thought, but I'll finish it later. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions. My eye just caught, Senator Pascovan, the fact that you're being appointed as of 2/19/15, so that's February 19th of this year, and your term expires on September 13th of this year. So it looks like you have a seven-month appointment. So
I understood. I thought that technically, they said that I think I started March 12th when I showed up for the first board meeting. I think that was it, but maybe I'm wrong. But anyway, I understand the conclusion you're reaching is that it's very short is accurate.
And I guess we'll see you back.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks very much. At this time, we'll take a brief at ease to sign the document, and then we'll go forward with Senate Bill 70. Our next item of business is Senate Bill 70, and welcome to Ben Ellis. If you would come forward, welcome. This bill before us actually has an amendment that we're going to address today. Senator Costello.
Madam Chair, I move Amendment 1.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz. Senator Stoltz has objected. I assume for purposes of explanation, is that correct?
I'm not a
surveyor.
You're
not quite there? Okay, all right. Well, fortunately, we have Mr. Ben Ellis with us, and he will be able to take us through the bill or the amendment. Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Ellis. If you would put yourself on the record, please.
Thank you, Chairman. Ben Ellis, Director of the Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation within DNR. Madam Chair, I'd just like to maybe refresh the committee's memory on this. SB 70 is necessary to open a corridor through four state legislative designated areas. That's the Denali State Park, Willow Creek, Nancy Lake, and Captain Cook recreational areas to the Right-of-Way Leasing Act for the purpose of construction of a natural gas pipeline from the North Slope of Alaska. would like to remind you, and it follows in the line of thinking that you were just following with Senator Pestban, that the corridor suffices for both the ASAP line as well as the AKLNG line. AGDC has worked on that coordination, and we have made sure that that is reflected in the maps that you have before you. Now, what does the amendment do? We heard loud and clear last time we were here, we needed to make sure, and I think it was Senator Costello that asked the question, do you have enough within the corridor to make sure that you don't have to come back? So we went and looked at that very closely. The amendment that is before you deals with those legals in expanding certain areas. The amendment, SB 70, adds 1,160 acres to the corridor proposed to the Denali State Park and adds 180 acres to the corridor proposed for Captain Cook State Recreation Area. The effect of these additions is to ensure the corridor for those areas is sufficiently wide to allow for the final placement of a natural gas pipeline once permitting environmental review are completed. No additional lands are proposed for the Willow Creek or the Nancy Lake recreational area, as those corridors are determined to be sufficiently wide enough as originally described in SB 70. In addition, the amendment clarifies that the leasing corridor is intended to include in its MTRS descriptions land that may be also or otherwise be describable by U.S. survey number. Now, Madam Chair, I one other thing. You have the maps. I might just mention that the only part that the two lines would be in the corridor is Denali State Park. And then as the, I believe, Senator Pescaman talked about the line splitting, where it goes through Nancy Lake and Willow Creek, that would be the ASAP line. And the one that is in the Captain Cook State Park would be the AKLNG line. And I would like to point out, we were so focused on making sure the legals were correct. You have a map of the Captain Cook State Park, a large one here, and it is a revision. If you compare it to what's in your packet, the area in this section right here in the legals were added, but we failed to capture that on the map that's in your packet. If you look at the map in your packet, you'll see a stair step in blue, and then area right here that is in just your normal topo color. That is the difference between those two. It was a mistake on our part. Now, online is with me to be able to answer questions is Don Perrin. He's the acting director for the State Pipeline Coordinator's Office. And here at the table with me, John Hutchins, with the Department of Law, that worked on this project intensely. So, questions, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Ellis. First, let me see if Mr. Perrin is, in fact, online. He's not showing up on my device.
He's accidentally on 50.
Pardon? Pardon me, thank you. I wasn't looking at the right bill. Thank you very much. He is online. There he is. Wait, let's see. Hold steady. We're on 70.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm still not seeing him.
He accidentally got moved to 50.
Okay. Well, I don't see him. Oh, there he is. Yes. He's there. Woo! See, in green. There he is. All right. All right. Committee members, any questions? Yes, Senator Costello.
Thank you. Thank you, through the chair, Mr. Ellis, for coming by my office. You are talking with me earlier about this. You had mentioned that this is sort of a conservative, meaning a path that's actually wider than you think we'll eventually need. And could you explain that for the committee?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, yes. We wanted to make sure that we didn't come back. So whether it's you consider it conservative or liberal, in the sense that we made sure that if for reasons of wetlands or for studies of the ground, and it was better to have the pipeline move slightly over one way or the other. We wanted to make sure that was included. Now, the difference between the two lines, and it really only plays a part when they're together in Denali, and that is that the AQLNG line is looking for a quarter of 2,000 feet to start out with. ASAP is 750. Don can correct me if those numbers are wrong, but I believe that's correct. And that's to start out with. As the line starts to get in and determine, those quarters become smaller as the line becomes more defined, number one, which line and what needs there are. And then until you get down to the final right-of-way, that would be the actual leasing of the corridor for whichever gas line you're talking about. As that becomes more narrow, we get further in, the lands that are in this in the corridor are released back and goes back to AS-41 or state park rules and regulations.
Very good. Follow-up, Senator Castillo? Further questions? And Mr. Tarrin is on the line. If anyone has any questions, he is the pipeline specialist.
He is the acting director of the state pipeline coordinator's office.
There you go. All right.
If I could add a point of clarification, Madam Chair.
Oh, please. Thank you. Put yourself on the record, please.
Hi, this is Don Perrin with the State Pipeline Coordinator's Office, and I thank you for hearing us again, and wanted to personally apologize for the map. It was a map that I inadvertently sent to Ben, and I wanted to apologize to the Governor's Office and the committee. We do have the right map now, and we did verify that all the maps match up with the legal description. So apologies for that. In terms of the corridor, it's important to note that this bill does not change the management of those lands within the corridor. For instance, for Captain Cook State Rec area, should this bill pass, the management of those lands would still be under Title 41. And that's why we, after looking at it a little more closely, we thought it would be better to widen it just a little bit, knowing that number one, those lands would still be managed as state recreational area lands, and at which time the right-of-way would be issued, it would be a very narrow strip right-of-way that would traverse through those lands.
Very good. I appreciate that clarification. Again, any questions? Senator Stoltz.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to remove my objection from the amendment. And okay. I understand on a continuing bill like this, I've worked on bills with extensive land descriptions, and it's certainly nothing wrong with even coming up with a correction in the last bill as you continue to be diligent. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for removing your objection so the amendment has been adopted. So, Mr. Ellis, I have a question now. I'm looking at the Denali State Park map. So look in your packet. And down here at the very bottom, you see the yellow, you've shown clearly where the right-of-way is in the little boxes as they follow the pipeline. But down here near the bottom, those little yellow boxes kind of get real narrow. What happened at that point?
Madam Chair, and I may defer to my lifeline on Don Perrin, but let me give it a shot.
Okay.
I believe the 2,000-foot corridor fell within those sections or subsections, and it was felt like we didn't need to go wider than that. But Don, can you verify that or correct me?
Oh, I can, Ben, Madam Chair. That particular location, because it jumps the Chulitna River at the Parks Highway, has been studied thoroughly by both ASAP and the LNG engineers. And so with that level of confidence, we felt like we didn't need to widen the corridor in that particular section. So that's the reason why that's narrow there.
And Madam Chair, to follow up, it jumps the river at the Dog Lake just above that.
Very good.
Or it takes a turn to the west.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Well, thank you for clarifying that. Any further questions on the amendment, the bill, the right-of-way? All right. Yes, Senator Coghill.
Only that
At one point, we asked you about access into these areas, and you said, you know, the foot, snow machine, sled. I just want to make sure we're talking about ATVs, too.
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, yes, ATV, all access, including ATV, it will be and continue to be available.
Just didn't see the language.
Yeah, the asterisk is, except during construction, there will be some temporary closures as we do in other areas, but no, sir, ATV is included in that.
Thank you.
And just for added information, Senator Coghill apparently had submitted some questions, and those answers are here. And the question about the ATV is on page 2. It's second to the last question on the bottom. Each of these are answered in writing by Deputy Commissioner Fogles. Great. Well, thank you. If any has no further questions, we'll open this up for public comment. Is there anyone online who wishes to comment on Senate Bill 70 as amended? I'm not seeing anyone. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 70 as amended? All right, seeing no one, I'll close public testimony. Further discussion or questions by committee? Seeing none, Senator Costello.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill number 70 as amended, Work Order 29-GS1820/alpha, from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 70 will pass from this committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the documents. Thank you. Bring Senate resources back to order. The bill before us now is Senate Bill 50, version 29, GS1019/W. So, welcome, Mr. Terrio. I'll let you introduce yourself and the bill for the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm Gene Terrio with AEA, and Deputy Commissioner Fred Parity is actually going to start the presentation.
Great. Welcome.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for your time today. We're especially grateful for the opportunity to appear before you as we move into the closing month of the session. Online, we have Ted Leonard from ADA, and I do want to share just a funny thing, but Ted's electronic signature now calls himself Executive Director Emeritus because John Springsteen has taken over as the lead in ADA. He is also online, as is Nick Simoniak. The three of them are in Anchorage, and Bob Shefchik, the IEP project lead, is in Fairbanks. I'd like to do a brief introduction. As you are all aware, from Administrative Order 272, Governor Walker directed the Commissioner of the Commerce Department to collaborate and facilitate at the highest levels of his administration to work, one, on consumer energy issues across Alaska, but of more germane to this committee hearing in this bill, more relevance to this committee in this bill, to work on the Interior Energy Project and keep our focus on that project. Interior Energy Project was developed to provide affordable energy to interior Alaska customers as soon as possible, to possibly provide for gas elsewhere after the interior is supplied, and to use private sector mechanisms as much as possible. The goal initially was to it was initially envisioned to deliver natural gas to interior homes with a $15 per 1,000 cubic feet of gas rate at the burner tip, which is the energy equivalent of $2 per gallon fuel oil. So we continue to work vigorously in that direction, and I would like to turn our time over to Mr. Terrio for a sectional analysis of the bill.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My comments will be to the Senate Energy Committee version. It is the backslash W version. Much of the language in the actual printed bill is making adjustments to a number of ADA bond and loan authorization sections in the statute. The final sections, section 4 and 5 of the bill, are those that apply to the Interior Energy Project. And so I'll discuss the changes that were made in the Senate Energy Committee when I get to those sections. Section 1 of the bill makes an adjustment to an authorization requirement that has been in place since 1990. You can see on page 1, line 11, the original dollar amount that was set that if ADA was going to bond for a project over $6 million, they had to first go and get approval for the siting of the project from the local government. That $6 million number has been on the statutes since 1990. It's not been adjusted for inflation, and so what is being proposed is to take that up to $10 million. Section 2 of the bill, which starts on page 2, middle of the page, deals with the authorization that is in statutes. The existing number is $10 million. You can see there on line 16 for bonding for projects, for development projects. That number also has been on the books since 1990. The proposal is to adjust it up to $25 million, again, to account for inflation, the size of typical projects that are coming to ADA for participation of development project bonding, and also to bring up to bring a number of sections of statute up to the same dollar amount. You'll see that $25 million new suggested level then appears in the next section, section number 3. Section 3 then deals with utilizing ADA's ability to give loan or issue loans out of the enterprise development account. On line 28, you can see again an adjustment there up to $25 million. The existing $20 million limit was set in 2005, has not been adjusted since then. And on line 30, the existing $20 million amount that was set in statutes when the original SETS fund was set up, the proposal is to move that up to $25 million also, so you can see we're looking for the same level of pre-authorization in a number of these sections of statutes. Page 3 of the bill is just existing statutory language that there is no proposed change to. Then when you get to page 4, we're now getting into the sections that deal with the Interior Energy Project. Section 4 was a new section that was added to the bill by the Senate Energy Committee. Senator Michicki in particular was very interested if the Interior was going to look for a source of natural gas and also be able to potentially look to the Cook Inlet area to source those gas molecules. He was very interested in ADA evaluating the possible ability of delivering those molecules on a small diameter pipeline. We did commit to work with NSTAR on the pricing of such an enterprise, also the manufacturers of flex steel pipe. We have done that and provided information to Senator Michicki indicating that it looks like that type of delivery would be severely economically challenged, but we will continue to evaluate that as just part of the normal ADA due diligence on looking at whether there are competing ideas that might offer a better opportunity for delivery at a lower price. The language that is suggested here deals with a previous prohibition that were put in the SET statutes that precluded SET's money from being used for a natural gas pipeline. And so the way that Senator Machiki structured this exemption specifically says that we can look at a 12-inch or smaller diameter pipe to potentially deliver those gas molecules to into the interior. And so that language was added by Senate Energy. Then we get to Section 5 of the bill, which actually proposes the change to the financing tools that were previously approved by the legislature for the Interior Energy Project. If you look on page 5 on line 4, you can see the original language had a North Slope was specifically stated there as the source of the gas molecules. Of course, as we've come through the process involving private sector players, it appeared that the delivery price off the North Slope was going to be at a price that we wouldn't be able to get the conversions in the community to actually get the demand up. And as with any energy, it's a volume business. If you can't get the demand up, then your per unit price is going to be prohibitively too high to get the conversions. So what has been proposed is we remove the designation that the gas be specifically sourced off the North Slope. That doesn't preclude the possibility that North Slope molecules still could be the solution or part of the solution, but it opens it up for ADA and AEA through the IEP process to look at the possibility of sourcing those gas molecules elsewhere in the state. The expectation is that there could be producers in Cook Inlet that could be come forward with private sector partners that could propose a delivered price that would again get the conversions that we are interested in the interior. As the North Slope language was removed, there was some concern by interior delegation members that would just open up a project. You could then have a project that gets developed in the Cook Inlet that is targeted at serving Western Alaska or serving Southeast Alaska. And so the recommendation was made that you include interior Alaska there. And so you see that on line 4. But because we wanted to make it clear that while interior Alaska is the initial target market, we have always considered that once we figure out how to deliver to the interior and that sort of core load in the interior Alaska, we are very much interested in knowing whether we can develop other markets also. Again, getting back to the issue of delivery of energy as a volume industry, if we can serve other needs, get the overall volume up, then you would expect the per unit price for everybody to go down. So the drafters suggested there on line 4 that we put that the initial market is in, target market is interior Alaska, but it's the primary market. By using the phrase primary market, it automatically suggests that there could be secondary markets that would be allowed to be served by this infrastructure. So again, if we are successful in growing a LNG production in the Cook Inlet area that serves interior Alaska, that LNG production could also be a source of gas molecules serving Southeast or serving Western Alaska over time. And so that's why that additional language was added. On line 5, you can see that initially the language talked about a distribution system in interior Alaska. Through the RCA action, we actually have now two certified utility gas distribution systems in interior Alaska, and so that's why that has been changed from system to systems. Section 6 gets to 6 and 7 gets to some cleanup of existing ADA bond authorization, old bond authorization. Section 6 would repeal some unused bond authorization that was part of airline maintenance facilities on the Anchorage Airport. Part of that old bond authorization was utilized, the rest of it was not. Once bond authorizations get past a certain age, the ADA board really will not use them because they're sort of stale. However, because they still remain on the books as a possible debt to the authority, when we go to bond council, they have advised us that those old authorizations have to be taken into consideration when bond council does new ratings for the entity. So the suggestion was that old authorizations should be cleaned up. In Section 6, we're proposing to remove the unused portion of that old authorization. Then in Section 7, we have a number of old authorizations that were never utilized that we're proposing being taken off the books. And then Section 8 is just an immediate effective date. It is standard procedure now when we are considering coming to the legislature to get approval of new bond authorizations for potential projects, that they generally have a five-year sunset on them, so that we will no longer in the future be confronted with these old authorizations that are so old they won't be used by the authority but still are considered to be a potential debt of the authority. So with that, Madam Chairman, that sort of answers the technical, you know, what we're trying to achieve in the piece of legislation. We certainly understand that there may be questions on the IEP project, the current status of that project. We're prepared to answer those or have individuals on the line that can chime in to help us to answer any of those questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Terrio. We have reached 5 o'clock, which is our adjournment time, but I'm thankful that you were able to describe the bill for us. And considering the calendar the rest of this week, it looks like Friday would be an opportunity to bring the bill back up again and actually discuss it, which will give members time to kind of dig in, contact you for more details, those kinds of things.
Senator.
Yes, Senator Stoltz.
Thank you. I know we're at the end, but I'd really like a chance to elaborate more on that.
Section 4 and the restricted pipe size and so forth. Look at the history of ADA. Their biggest source of failures has been legislative involvement and micromanagement. And I think that's a pretty sound statement of history. And I'd like to make sure we thoroughly vet and investigate that. Anything that didn't come, the parts of the bill that didn't come from the Industrial Export Authority. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
And Madam Chairman, just I certainly understand the Senator's question, but to make clear that language just allows the authority to consider it, doesn't direct that it be selected. And so our view really is that would probably have been part of the due diligence in delivering to the Interior. Was there a better, smarter way to do it?
Okay, thank you. Senator Coghill.
Maybe when you come back next, Madam Chair, they could bring a table of the repeals, what those authorities were being repealed. If you could just bring a table of those, I think that'd be good for us. Oh, I've already got it.
Actually, Madam Chairman, the governor's transmittal letter on the legislation does have a list of what all of those were.
Right.
So it's
apologies. I just didn't see it.
We'll make sure everybody has that. I know I don't have it either. So, any other things that they should bring with them when we hear Senate Bill 50 again? All right, seeing no further suggestions, thank you very much for being here. And like I say, it looks like Friday would be a good opportunity to hear this again. We can put it at the beginning of the calendar for that day, since we've already had a presentation of the bill. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
So with that, this concludes our meeting for today. Our next hearing is Wednesday, April 1st. We'll take up Senate Bills 42 and 68. So we'll adjourn at this time. Let the record reflect that it is 5:03 p.m. Thank you.